It's hard not to add a side of hot, crispy hash browns to your favorite McDonald's breakfast. It's even harder not to eat said hash browns before you get home. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey, do you want to be like me? Make podcasts that everyone loves? Yeah, you do. But chances are, you don't want to spend a bunch of money doing it. No worries. A solution exists. Spotify's got a platform that lets you make podcasts super easy, then distribute those podcasts everywhere, and you can even earn money doing it. All in one place for free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters, and here's how it works. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else podcasts are heard. Also, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. I'm speaking from experience when I say that all those additional features like video podcasts, Q&As, polls, those are things you won't find for cheap elsewhere. But with Spotify for Podcasters, it's all totally free, no catch. I highly recommend you give it a try. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started. Thanks. We love you. Everybody, welcome to Pretty Scary.
Pretty Scary, boo.
Carrie?
She's not talking again.
Son of a bitch, Carrie.
She's in a bad mood again.
Why is she being this way?
I don't know, but I guarantee you she's going to take to Twitter once again when she finds out that...
She's going
to
act up, and especially when she realizes we have a guest. So
yeah, we have a rad guest.
It doesn't matter if she's not talking.
No, it doesn't, because we technically have somebody filling in for her. Ouch.
Pretty much.
Ooh.
I would argue the Carrie Martin of dudes in the Midwest.
Right, keep going.
Who are guesting on the podcast, Brock Wilbur.
Brock Wilbur. Hey, Brock, how's it going?
It's me, Gary. I'm Gary. It's good to be here.
That is a good Carrie
Martin. I'm going to be honest.
Is that a pretty good Carrie? Okay.
Exactly right. Like the voice from the Mothman Prophecy movies. Richard Gere.
Chapstick. Imagine me saying it back in that voice if I still had the enthusiasm to do so.
That's right. That is a big clue. Brock.
Yeah.
There it is.
Man, what a bad movie.
So bad.
What an incredibly bad movie that introduces you to the idea of cryptids in a way that, like, that is the language of it that for the rest of my life was like, okay, so, like, the rest of these are, like, Mothmen.
Yeah.
I get it now. It's just your local Mothman. And people are like,
right.
Well, yeah, I guess so, but, like, you needn't start from that point. I was like, no. I heard about the chapstick. I heard it from the guy. I know.
I just like this concept of your... Hi there, I am your local Mothman. I'm here to just go ahead and clue you in to some catastrophe that's going to be happening to you.
Hey, guys, I'd like to tag you in. I'm Cryptid Craig. I just live in everyone's neighborhood, and I just let you know what the local cryptid is. That's sort of the
have the cryptids in your area unionized.
I'm his wife, Martha. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm a stay-at-home cryptid, okay? I raise our cryptid children. But I got to be honest, I'm so, so thankful for my husband going out there, warning people about those barn fires, those
workers' rights, or take this bridge down.
Another one, again.
I love that they celebrate the Mothman every
year. I don't
want
the government coming all up in here and saying we can't put chapstick in every hotel room around here, because without that chapstick, what will we talks about?
Here's the thing. If my husband wants to disorient Richard Gere on his long road trip out to buy a house, the government should not intervene and tell him he cannot do that. Okay? That is his role in the family. How else are we supposed to put bread on the table for our Mothman local children? Our cryptids, our little cryptids, Emily, Frank, Robbie, the cryptids.
Obviously, we're talking about Nexium today.
Yeah, no, another seamless transition brought to you by Adam Todd Brown.
Yeah, this segue brought to you by Segway. Segway, when you need a segue,
no.
Segway.
If we ever get that sponsorship, it's going to be the best day of our lives.
I cannot wait.
To be fair, if you were to get the sponsorship, it is for Segway, which is a device that murdered its creator.
Yeah.
So, like, you know,
that is on brand.
It would fit.
That is on brand for us specifically.
I like a challenge. I'm fine with that.
Well, I'm excited. As our pretty scary listeners may or may not know, I've been busy working on some other projects, and one of them has allowed me to cross paths with my new friend Brock, who wrote a very interesting piece about a sex cult based out of Albany, New York, that has been posing as a self-help group called Nexium. And
right.
Brock, why don't you give us the little Reader's Digest version of what Nexium is real quick, since you're our local expert at the moment, in addition to being our local cryptid.
It's a thing you can wrap up in like 90 seconds, right?
Oh, yeah, he'll
just
be
run
fine.
Through it quick.
No, I'm
That's
not
great.
Worried about him. I'm really not.
Tick, 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 tick. 2016, early on, just post the national election, was working in journalism, mostly doing like pop culture stuff, and was like, I need to do something that matters because, oh, fuck, we're on fire. Mm-hmm. The worst thing that could happen has happened, and we need to make sure it doesn't happen again. And at that time, my wife found a job listing for me that was for a new company. And the company's job was to call out fake news. And they were going to, via an internal system, evaluate news and evaluate whether or not it was true or false, and this was going to be what they were doing, and they seemed to have money behind them, and seemed to have been functioning already, and it seemed like a pretty okay thing, and I was like, oh, you know what, that seems like something I would throw my weight behind, that would make me feel good to do this thing, especially because, like, me and my wife wound up getting married basically a day or two after Trump got sworn in, and my mom was at the wedding, like after the wedding, like reading off her iPad, like, did you know that Trump just destroyed all of Al-Qaeda today? And I was like,
oh, God.
Where are you reading that from? And she's like, this website. And I was like, what's the, it does it end in .com? And she's like, well, it ends in like .nz.iraq.net .iraq again. And I was like, okay, well, like, we have some work to do here. So like this thing was like, okay, if I can take on a job that unprograms my parents' generation, like, that seems worthwhile.
Yeah.
And so the job was with a new company called the Knife of Aristotle, which it doesn't mean anything, but it sounds like something that, like, a dude that tried to fuck you after, like, a freshman year, like, philosophy class would come up with, like, no, like, in my frat, they call me, like, the Knife of Aristotle.
It sounds like a pickup artist technique.
Yeah, it does.
It absolutely does, right?
Okay, you see that girl in the corner? We're going to run the Knife of Aristotle on her, bro. Go!
You know what? So, ladies never see the peacocking of the Knife of Aristotle coming. That's what...
No. They're just beautiful minding all the girls at the bar and game theorying us.
Exactly. just math the entire time.
Because everybody knows
and that was sort of what this was.
Yeah, keep going. Sorry, cut you off.
No, no, what were you saying?
I was going to say, because everybody knows that every guy is down to leave the hottest girl at the bar alone. That's my favorite part of that scene, is like, if we all go after the average girls, we'll go home with a date. But the hot girl,
right,
who we all secretly want to go out with, and who we hate because she's so attractive, she's going to drink alone. So then the next guy who sees numbers in his mind can just ask her out.
Right.
Like, I don't get it.
Which in 2008, I went out on the Sunset Strip right after moving to Los Angeles, and it was the only night that I ever wore black fingernail polish and a stupid fucking hat. And it turned out that I was at the same douchey bar that Mystery was at.
Oh, my.
Hell yeah.
And he is also a 6'7 man, and I was just like, I'm just like an asshole that wanted to paint his fingers tonight.
And after
he left,
was he like, "Where are your goggles, bro?"
I was the pickup artist guy, and I was just like, "No, no, oh God, no, 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 no!
Oh, no.
I don't want any of whatever this is." But oh no,
oh, no!
But also, if you don't understand the context of what's happening, like just a bunch of like drunk people are suddenly coming up to you, like, "Yeah, yeah, let's follow through on where would this start?" And I was like, "None of this started anywhere. I'm so sorry.
I am not invested in your team whatsoever."
No.
I'm here for the chicken wings, and that is it. That's like me at every sports bar I've ever gone into. It's like, do you have pickled eggs or any kind of grilled cheese scenario? If you do, I'm good. Otherwise, we're going to have to
I'm sorry, did you say pickled eggs?
I love pickled eggs.
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Was that strong? Is that a strong choice?
Well, I mean, we can explore it on future episodes.
You just didn't see that
it's
coming.
It's troubling, for sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it's like you get some salt, you get some pepper.
No, I get it. I get it. It's gross. Yeah, you got to dress it up.
I'm not going to die on the pickled egg hill, okay? So I'll say that. Like, I can leave. That can be left behind in the apocalypse. I'm moving on. All right, let's get back to Brock.
All right.
No, no, I'm on Team PE, we're fine.
Hey, that's a great shirt. It just says PE, and there's an egg. Like a single-dimension egg.
And the egg is the hill, and you've died upon it. Like, there's just a dead body.
Can we make the person
caressing the side
that died on it really small? So you have to be really close to see the dead person on top of the egg, because it's a big issue.
Right.
Anyway, I'm glad we have this in common, Brock. So
my wife found this job in this like fake news company, and I applied, and they were very quickly back to me with this sort of hey, you should work here, and here's what the salary is, and it seems nice. And I was like, okay, that seems nice. And then out of nowhere, instead of the job starting, they were like, by the way, before this starts, you have to come to the woods in Albany to a cabin that we own for 5 weeks, and we're not going to pay you. And it's an ethics training course, and ethics is going to be in air quotes. And like at the end of that, your job gets to start. And I was like, hey, I have some questions about that. And they were like, why do you have so many fucking questions? Just come to the woods, you piece of shit. Like, just come out here to the woods. It's 5 weeks.
And then
you
start the thing.
It's a journalism job. I don't know why you have questions about this.
Have you seen Midsommar yet?
Yes, absolutely I have.
Oh, did we lose you?
Yeah, except I'm not the shitty boyfriend, so it's pretty okay. which this thing started, like, it was supposed to start, like, my wife and I looked at that and we were like, oh shit, like, this is a cult. Like, what a funny joke. And then, like, spent a week or two looking into the finances and had some friends hop in, and then we were like, oh shit, it actually is a fucking cult. It's tied to what is legitimately a cult. Holy shit. Oh my God, I'm afraid. And then that led into a point that was like, should I still go? Because they don't know what I know. But it was like the week after we got married, and I was like, honey, should I go? Because there's definitely like a book deal at the end of this, if I survive. And she was like, you can, but like, you have to get me a hotel room nearby, and like, you have to stay there with me every night so that I know you're alive. And I was like, I don't have like hotel room money. Like, I have die in a cult fire money. Of course I do. And that was sort of when I ducked out. But then luckily, writing about it. So what you've described is that at that point, I was writing at Paste, and at Paste, mostly what I do is interview comedians and some video game people. And then I stumbled into this, and I was like, hey, you guys, I think I found a terrifying fucking cult. And they were like, oh, my God. And they're like, is there anything about them we should know? I was like, here's the thing. Every time anyone's ever tried to report about them, they've been sued into fuck hell forever because nuisance lawsuits, and that's how they make their money. And they're like, cool, cool, cool. And I was like, so I'd like to publish a piece. They're like, cool, cool, cool. I was like, but really, if we could publish the cool, cool, cool. So it basically turned into like a several month investigation where like I hired other friends. We worked on things. Other people that were friends of mine that were just good at like Freedom of Information Act requests and stuff were like doing these things. And what we turned up was like this thing, the Knife of Aristotle, was a subset of a group called Nexium. And Nexium is spelled N-X-I-V-M. It is designed to be impronounceable because if you were to be at one of their compounds and learn their name, you would not know how to Google it because it doesn't correspond to something, which is a fucking pretty cool idea. Like, it's...
Yeah, we gotta give them that. That's group, pretty good.
I will give them that. It is a group where everything else about them is, like, fucking dumb. They have, like, three or four ideas that I'm like, you know what? You fucking... You guys.
Yeah.
All right.
That's smart.
That one right there.
That's the one thing.
So Nexium has existed since the 90s. It basically folded out from like a call center. And then it became this guy, Keith Raniere, who was giving basically positivity talks, but like the early versions of like TED Talks. To business people, but like everything he was saying was getting applause, but it's fucking nothing. And to understand this guy now like sues people constantly because he's like, I invented the idea of fax machines and I lost the paperwork because literally my dog ate it.
Yeah.
But like Sprint, you owe me money for it. Like, it's this sort of like nonsense thing where you're like, it is the ultimate stupid person's idea of what a smart guy is. Like, oh, I invented teleconferencing and the Bell phone company owes me money. And you're like,
yeah,
that's a fucking loser.
But
also this guy is the sort of guy that also says to like his followers, like, you have to drive me because if I drive myself, my incredibly gigantic brain we'll set off police scanners for speeding and then we'll be pulled over. And you're like, yeah, people believe this. Well, fuck me. Okay.
And it wasn't just that people believed it. People were paying thousands of dollars to hear this, right?
Exactly. And so like what happened was he wound up on the cover of like Forbes and these other places because like businessmen would come to his 1 week conferences and hear this stuff. It was like, you know what you should do? You should like, and I don't know if anyone's ever said this to you, believe in yourself, and that's where money's gonna come from. And then like people would applaud, and at the end of it they'd be like, my god, that fucking guy and his dick, oh my god, he's so incredible, and you should pay whatever to go see him talk about whatever that was. And so the end sum goal was that he basically became a Tony Robbins, which,
yeah,
you know, has a different connotation almost immediately. And so he was doing this, and what he figured out was that, like, the basic structure of what he was saying about, like, how you should live your life and do these things, and this sort of, like, overwhelming, like, honesty program that he'd come up with, it could be broken down and used in so many different specific forms of art and specific forms of like creativity and stuff. So they created this journalism group as a subset of this, just like they created subsets that were based out of like the West Side of LA that were just based on yoga or were based all over the world based in acting or were based in teaching women
actors
how to love themselves. But eventually it was sort of this like, you know what you should really love is the idea that you marry a man and that he should have multiple partners and you should shut the fuck up about it. All these things all built into the idea that you would eventually wind up at basically their Albany, outside of Albany camp, which was this place that they owned, which was the place I was supposed to go to, which it turns out is a small community that they own. And people that go there don't know that they own everything. They don't know that everyone that lives there is a part of this. So, like, people that I've talked to that wound up out there as part of this training program, there are cell phone blockers. So they were out there for, like, a week, and they're like, I don't know why I can't hear from friends or family. And then suddenly, like, a text would get through and it was like, get out of there, get on the train. And as they would run through town, text would keep coming in. It's like, everyone there is part of it. Get out of it. It, like a very Wicker Man, like Hot Fuzz situation where it's like,
amazing.
Get to the train because for the greater good, everyone's in on
it. This is the thing. And I just want to jump in here for a second. Like, it's the thing about, I think, cults in general is that if you're in it and you're smart enough to realize, okay, I've really like gotten myself into something, the way the way that a cult, specifically Nexium and others, would then attack you, make you sound insane. Like, you're saying the same stuff that a schizophrenic person says. You're like, oh, they put they put cell phone blockers up and everyone in town knows that they're part of this thing. And, you know, it's just not the kind of thing that a normal person encounters. But meanwhile, you know, you post this article and what happens after that, Brock? I love this story.
Oh, so I post that and like I said, I got Pace to really agree to be like, hey, you know, because like a few years earlier, somebody from the New York Times tried to write basically a piece about how this is all being funded by two girls heiresses to, yeah,
the Seagram's Empire,
the
right?
The Seagram's, yeah, we're talking old
the
alcohol
The Seagram's
money.
Empire. And
or soda.
And I'll throw this out there, and I hate this, and it's so fucking weird. But, like, the people that I've talked to that know them think that they are of the level that they barely know how to read. So it is almost this, like, you're taking advantage of somebody that's, like, on a diminished mental capacity. But it's two girls that have, like, infinity money. And
they're stupid.
You know,
like,
yeah, and they're
medically,
stupid. And
medically
brought
stupid.
Into this.
I don't know another way to say
right.
it. Oh, God, that makes so much sense. So,
yeah.
It really does. So they have infinity money to do this and to keep people in lawsuits. So Pace stood behind me and they're like, if somebody sues, we'll go to bat. And I published my piece about it. It's like, hey, like, you know, Business Weekly loves to celebrate this guy, but I think he's running a fuck house. and like, in addition to that, like, he's running all these other side businesses that are nonsense. And like, there were other people that had been, there's a few other people that for like a decade had been like on the internet trying to be like, well, no one pay attention to the fact that this is a cult and no one would. And I was like, you know, look at these guys, look at this guy, like you should. So immediately afterwards, I was like, okay, they're going to sue the shit out of me. So every time somebody brought like an Amazon package to my door in Los Feliz in my apartment, like when they knocked and asked for a signature, I was like, I'm signing for being like served.
I'm getting served. Totally getting
served. I'm terrified. And at a certain point, like a month in, I was like, oh, it's just not happening. And that's when I started to notice the people following me and taking pictures and following me and my wife and spying on us and like hanging out where we would hang out, having lunch and writing down notes about everything we said. And I was just like, well, this is odd. What an odd situation.
Well, okay,
to be in.
So I want to hear I want to hear of an instance of that because I'm fascinated by
yeah,
this.
Yeah, like when, how close would they
when did
get?
You figure this out? Like, when were you like, oh, we're definitely being followed? Like, when did you go from am I imagining this to no, this is like, you know, the Rosemary's Baby moment? Like, this isn't a nightmare. This is actually happening. Like, when did that happen?
My dumb one was that I went into a Subway sandwich shop and a guy was taking pictures of me with the sort of lens that you would use to shoot a bird on top of a mountain from 10 miles away, but like from 5 feet away from me, just like outside the Subway. And I was like waving. I was like, yes, you know, I get a foot long tuna. I don't respect my body, but like, this doesn't prove that you're not a cult. What's happening here?
Wow.
But the one that really, like broke it into the place that I was like, we have to maybe leave, was that it was a Sunday brunch. We went down, Los Feliz Boulevard. We stopped into a place that we like. There was absolutely no one there and we stopped in, and it was me and my wife. And, so basically the piece came out, and when the piece came out, a lot of almost entirely women were reached out and they're like, hey, I was in the cult for a couple of years, or I was almost in it, or like a friend of mine is in it. I'd like to talk to you about things. And I was like, I don't know where this is going, but I should record these things and record these conversations and talk about stuff. So I entered into like a year and a half, a 2 year period where every third day, I would just talk to somebody about like sexual trauma or emotional trauma that they had experienced because of this. And so this thing came a few months into that, and I'd never, ever once, ever outside of the boundaries of my house spoken about these things. And it was just my wife and me at this place on Los Feliz Boulevard. Again, Sunday brunch, we just each had a drink and like a little bit of food, and there was no one else there. And I was like, hey, so like somebody told me this story this week, and it has fucked me up so much. And I started talking about the story in a way that like, yeah, no one in the movie Spotlight ever went out with their wife and wound up talking at brunch and then ruined Spotlight. So like, I'm not the journalist I want to pretend that I am, but we're doing that. And I'm sharing that story. And all of a sudden my wife, with her pinky, points. And I was like, what's up? And she's like, do you see? And I was like, I don't see anything. And a guy had come into the restaurant. He had sat behind me. And every time I spoke, he wrote in a notebook.
Whoa.
And every time I was not speaking, he covered that notebook with a laptop and a secondary notebook so that no one could see that he was writing in a notebook. And he was directly behind us. So I started saying things just to be like saying something.
Right.
And she was like, yep, he's writing that down. And at some point, I stood up and went to like the restroom, and like he like threw his notebook into a bag and tried to pretend like he was just there. And I went up to the bartender, and I like slid her like a note.
Jesus.
And I was like, hey, I'm not trying to be a creep ass. I fucking promise you, you know who I am. I'm not a creep ass guy. But the guy that is sitting next to us, I think that he is a private investigator sent to follow me. Could you look at the name on his tab and just, here's my phone number. If you can tell me later, just tell me. And she looked at it and like looked up to me, and she's like, okay. We got home a bit later after he did indeed follow us back. And she texted with his name. And of course we Googled. And of course he had this whole like page about like being in love with the cult and being like, I'm going to be a big journalist someday.
Oh,
and we're just like, oh,
wow,
what a weird fucking
Brock.
Thing. So the combination of like, what is the worst possible version of this is not that like a PI is hired. The worst possible version is that you, you farm out interns that you're just like, hey, who wants to really go follow this guy around town and write down everything he says and does? And then it's just like, yeah, I have no experience doing that professionally, but I'll absolutely give it a try.
What the hell? That's so intense.
Right.
So how long did that go on? How long were you followed?
I would say that happened for a couple of months. It reached a point where like, I at one point was telling friends to like, don't come in through the front door of our apartment building. Like,
wow.
There's a guy out there, I think. Like, there's nothing he's going to shoot. Like, you can't like, oh, look, you're friends with me. That proves that they're not a cult. There's nothing. And that like ties back into the idea of him with the gigantic fucking lens outside the subway. None of this was ever to like have a disinformation campaign or any sort of blackmail. They weren't going to fight anything. It was just to say like, hey, look, we're fucking looking at you.
Yeah, to like, scare you.
Sure, just, I guess.
Well, and you know, I think about, you know, you're a tall dude, you know, right?
Right.
And I think about the, like, you know, I had a baby 2 years ago, and if somebody was following me around on my own, I guess I'd be upset. But the idea of like having a baby with me, or you know, I'm married, you're married, like to me, this it's like you have a very different view of your own, you know, worth as a human being. But when they start getting, you know, okay, they know where I live, but that means they know where my family lives, that starts to get in your head, I would imagine.
It is that thing, like, I am a 6'7" man, and like the the guy with the camera that they sent after me was like, I'm going to say 5'3". So he was like somebody's like middle school science substitute teacher. And I was like, I looked out the window and I was like, I can chase him.
Yeah.
I can just scream
just
at him,
chase him.
And terrify him. Or like what would happen later when like they were still around was like, I can punch him so hard, I think he will die. I think that, like, I could just turn around and just give like a single pop, especially like, they're following behind me. I think I would be able to explain to the cops, this guy's been taking pictures of me for 8 weeks. Look at his camera.
Right.
That's what he's been trying to do. But then there's a different lawsuit to have there. And so it was one of those things like it's almost it's plying at a gigantic man. And like then there was also things where like I would talk to my wife and she would like go home separately from me. And I was like, wait, I stayed here to like keep them here. But like, what if there's somebody else?
Right.
What is somebody else going to do? Like it is exceptional bullshit. And we live in a city where, you know, anyone in Los Angeles has come up against, you know, whatever happens around Scientology. This was all a block or two away from one of the biggest Scientology centers in town, where there is a group that's a volunteer group that goes down to Hollywood on Saturdays because people that are walking along the street will sometimes start to talk to somebody, and two Scientologists will come up and sort of like cross hands and force them into a building. And so there is a volunteer group that just stands there to make sure that people aren't forced into the building. Like, it's 2019, and that's still a part of a thing that happens.
That's insane. I didn't know that.
So,
but I believe you.
Yeah,
I mean, that doesn't surprise me.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't...
Yeah, people are like... Yeah, they don't have an answer to a question. They're like, well, let me think about that. And like, well, why are you thinking about this? And somebody will put two crossed hands behind their back and they'll just push them into a building. And then that's a thing that's happened and no one can come in there. So it's what a fucking nightmare world we live in. So
that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, for this to be a couple of blocks away is hard.
So as a journalist, you know, I think the biggest reason that I thought, you know, coming on here, and I mean, the Paste article is very interesting. NXIVM itself is very interesting. But I feel like there's a lot of ink spilled, even by you, on the cult itself. If people are interested in NXIVM, that there's ample material on it now to go look at.
Right.
What you and I talked about the other day was, you know, really like the point of trajectory of your piece in general, which is the state of journalism, right? So you are a journalist. You wanted to continue to be a journalist. You were attracted to a job that was supposedly fighting for, you know, integrity in journalism. And then this is where you ended up. And I just find the whole thing kind of, you know, ironic. That something like, you know, NXIVM can create, you know, a horrible string of experiences for someone who really truly wanted to get the truth out. And I find that interesting because on its own, it's its own parallel between wanting to get the truth out or understanding the truth, which is how people get sucked into cults, which is crazy,
right?
Because you found this out based on a job posting. Like,
right.
That to me, all of that, tying that together, is such a mind fuck because, you know, the idea that they're trying to find people under the guise of it being a job is really powerful to me. And how often is this happening, and how successful are people at that?
Yeah, I think the most impressive part of this is that you were skeptical of it, because I know so many people who would be like, holy shit, 5 days at a cabin in the woods.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Just got a new job. That's
I've
going
seen
on the
Dirty
gram.
Dancing. This is great.
Like, yeah. Like, I know so many people who would have just gone.
Especially contract workers. I mean,
yeah.
And that's what, you know, so many of us are, you know, doing gig stuff. All three of us are freelancers right now. And you're so vulnerable in that position, you know. And what did it make you... Okay, so... You go through this experience and it's its own form of trauma, honestly, because, you know, yes, you weren't turned into a sex slave, obviously, but now you're still trying to be an artist. You're still trying to be a journalist. You're still trying to be out there. Have you, how has this affected just, you know, the way you go about finding professional opportunities?
Well, like Adam just said, it would be exciting to have 5 days in the cabin. This was 5 weeks. It was 5 weeks of unpaid training.
Oh, that's
before
that's
you got this job.
Much.
But people still do it.
But
people, yeah, people still do it. Do. I've but, done free work yeah. for work. I've done that.
Yeah,
exactly. And that was the conversation I had with so many people, was that like, and not even just them. They were like, hey, you know, I have a journalism degree. Whatever place I was just working for just went under. What am I supposed to do? And they had like mentors that were like, so wait, you just have to do like 5 unpaid weeks and then you have like a serious ass job. Like, go do that.
There you go.
So like, even the elite of journalism were like, that is a better offer than anything that exists in journalism, which is, it was one of those things that like, when all this broke, I was just like, what the fuck was wrong with them? That they brought in journalists and didn't think a journalist at some point was going to be like, oh, this is a hoax.
Well, I but mean, like, but think
that
about...
That is pretty brazen. Within,
yes.
Yeah.
No, I actually, I think that it's probably a safer bet than we all want to admit. Because, well, first of all, if you look, the whole thing about Nexium, you know, what I said at the top of the conversation is people have such a low level of sympathy for people that get sucked into Nexium because the people that are initially brought in are very, very successful. You know, like Mark Vicente, who did What the Bleep Do We Know? That's a working,
right.
First of all, that's a working documentarian, which those are two words that never go together. You know, I mean,
right.
This is like somebody who is genuinely interested.
And Mark's fucking incredible,
right.
And kudos to him.
Exactly. That's my point is like, and he was the one that brought Sarah Bronfman in. And, you know,
right.
Brock and I have had conversations about this, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, she's kind of the Marty Rathburn, in my opinion, of Nexium.
Right.
that's a whole other Oprah, but... I am not
here is the giant takeaway from everything that happened of like go ahead.
I was gonna say I think the mistake was you're a comedian. I think that's where they fucked up. I don't think I think their idea of journalism hadn't exactly been fully realized yet when you answered, because
fair enough,
comedians we just don't trust anyone or anything. So that's
right.
That's really, in my opinion, you know.
And did you know that we have no self-respect whatsoever? We'll see something through to the end if there's a story.
Yeah,
there.
That's why I loved your comment of like, I definitely have burning, you know, in a cult fire money. Like I have said on multiple occasions to my husband, in looking into his eyes, like if I had never met you, I would have joined Scientology as an experiment. I absolutely would have done it. Like, there's no question. Because I am fascinated, you know, but, like, you know, I've seen maybe Into the Mouth of Madness too many times. Like, I can't at this... Now I have a kid, I can't. There's too much real estate. But not literal real estate.
Do you read Scientology Sutter Cain? Is that the...
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm just fascinated by... I mean... You know, one of the things that I've talked about on this show a lot is that, you know, I was very heavily involved in the evangelical community. And, you know,
right.
I think everybody who's exited that community has at one point had the thought of, you know, at some point this was a cult too. And I have to understand
right.
that. Like, I have to internalize that at some point. Like, this all started in a messy way. And it's a conversation I've had with my husband 100 times about Scientology, which is like, yeah, I mean, at a certain point, like,
right.
You know, it all starts with like 8 people in a room just determined
yeah.
to be right about everything. So I'm not as maybe as judgmental as I should be. Nexium is fascinating because it attracts these really smart, successful people. And then, you know, as you know, Brock, and, you know, as Adam knows, the progression into the weirdness of it is the most fascinating part, in my opinion, because there's a lot of money from start to finish. Scientology isn't necessarily like that. Scientology is like, in the beginning, you're like a nothing actor. But Nexium is like, well, what are you pulling every year? Okay, now we're interested in what you have to say. They just start with wealthy people, which I think is very interesting.
And smart.
And very smart, because you've got a lot of people that are used to opportunity. And when you
right.
come from opportunity, you come from a pedigree, you come from these legacies, you don't necessarily always hear you're important or that you matter. Like, no one's giving you the Rocky speech because you seemingly have already won. And in that way, I can see why those people are more vulnerable. Does that make sense?
Right.
So, I mean, again, like, I just think their misstep was, you know, they attracted a comedian to the job posting, because that just is never a good idea.
I mean, you're bringing up, like, you know, the number of people I talked to that came up and they were like, Yeah, of course, as a kid, I went to Promise Keepers or Fellowship of Christian Athletes or, you know.
Me too, man. Me too. I had a whole promise ring conversation earlier today.
I missed all of that. I didn't.
Had that Jars of Clay CD.
Oh, my God. I still have
Adam,
it.
Adam, good on you.
Yeah, I don't know why Adam wants to be my friend.
Well,
but
my parents both went to, like, Christian Bible colleges.
Whoa.
And the minute they got out of college, they were like, nah, that's fine. Well,
nah.
Wrong choice.
You're lucky. You're very lucky.
And then they turned into the kind of parents that took me to see the first Friday the 13th movie in theaters.
I feel like that's a good progression.
Look, there's nothing better than the parent that, like, did religion, like, his college, to be like, hey, you should go to college, but, like, don't fucking waste your money the way that I did.
But do it for real, not like Mom and Dad did.
Yeah.
My dad went to the American Academy of Actors, so if you want to talk about cults, we can talk about that, too. And my mom never finished college.
My grandmother was really religious, but she didn't force it on me. The last time...
Again, you lucked out.
The last time I remember going to church as a child, she took me to she was Methodist, I believe.
Oh, they're pretty laid back.
Something like that. And or no, maybe they were Baptist because someone was getting baptized. Is that how that works?
Yes.
And all I remember
is that
is
how,
like,
that works.
It seemed like like in my vision of it, the person was like 500 feet in the air. Like, way up there. And there were, like, glowing red lights.
Yeah.
But my grandmother...
Yeah, that tracks.
My grandmother...
Brock and I are like, what else you got?
My grandmother bought me a dinosaur pop-up book. And that kind of softened the blow. Because it looked like someone was getting murdered.
Was the baptism...
They were drowning someone.
So the tub was probably 8 or 9 feet in the air, right?
It was up
like
there,
behind,
yeah.
Like, so there's the stage, and then you realize, like, in Country Bear Jamboree style, like, oh, there's a whole set back there.
Right.
And then the curtains go up, like, oh, there's a tub? There's, like, a water tub?
Yeah, there was a whole performance, and every page I turn, pterodactyls.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah, it was all...
My question is, within the dinosaur book... What age were the dinosaurs coming from?
That's a good... That just dawned on me that I was reading a dinosaur book in church. Wow.
Wow. It's almost like Brock and I should start a cult where we help people unearth childhood memories.
It's like my grandmother was quietly going, fuck this. Here, read the dinosaur book.
Adam, what we just used on you was called technology.
Oh,
oh my God.
I feel like I have a button I need to flatten.
Yes, you do. You have a button.
That's a Scientology term.
I do. Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah. You flatten that button.
You hit on a thing here that was the thesis to this section, which is sort of the idea that, like, the people around this are smart and good, which was the thing that fucked me up about this when I got started, like, post my piece coming out and, like, talking to people, where I was like, everyone I'm talking to is, like, so much fucking smarter than me. What are you doing in a cult?
Yep.
Like, what series of words magic tricked you into doing this? And they're like, no, you know, I was always doing these things, and then I did this, and, like, I just wound up here, and then I lost 8 years to it. I was like, nope, let's go back. Let's cycle back there. You person with, like, an SAT score that blows me out of the water. What is that? And so much of it came back to this thing that, everything was a playbook page out of, like, old Scientology or old Est or whatever, like, group that you would, want to use. But it always came back to this idea of, like, hey, you smart person, are you smart enough to know that what you were going to do in this life, like working in marketing somewhere or, you know, writing on this TV show or, you know, running this company, that it sucks? It sucks in a historical sense. It sucks in an ethical sense. It sucks in this way that, like, what you do, you will become that dinosaur set of bones in the earth. And they're like, what we have right now is a system of things that are helping change the world, and we are making the world a better place. And if you come, give us your time and energy, you are going to go fix the world. And so a lot of these people, very smart people doing very smart things and inevitably selling out families and themselves and everyone around them in the pursuit of this, thought that, like, they were, like, fixing entire countries. They thought that they were being told, like, you know, this country in South America, like, wow, it was a dictatorship, but now it's a democracy, and everyone there has, like, medicine and things like that. And it's like, if your only source of news is this, because you've been told that every other source of news that you could ever encounter, including anything you could Google, is a lie,
yep,
then you're like, wow, I am being told that I am, like, fucking Jesus, and, like,
yep,
good on me for doing this, and I'm going to keep doubling down on that. And I was like, okay, you know what? That would make sense to me. And there is a there's a video game coming out this week called The Church in the Darkness. And it's on all the platforms. My friend Richard made it. And it is basically Jonestown as a video game. It's set in the 70s.
Damn.
It's a cult. Your sister's in there. You're supposed to go in to try and get her out. You can either go in like trying to be guns blazing, or you can go in there like trying to hide, or you can go in trying to be like, I would like to try to be part of what you're doing. But as part of one of our...
I'm so excited.
You just made... Like, that. Adam looks like it's Christmas right now. I've never seen Adam light up.
That sounds like tons of fun.
Yeah, that does sound amazing.
It's Metal Gear Solid, but with Christianity. Oh. I hope you're okay with this.
Oh, so just basic, like, Christianity? I mean, I don't really understand. I'm confused.
Vintage Christianity.
So as part of one of our discussions about that, because he was like, I wanted to talk to you about like your cult thing, and we got into it, and he was like, why do you think that people go to cults? And we got into a discussion, and the thing that we both hit on about why somebody in 2018, 2019 is turning to cults is that, I don't know if you've noticed this, but Twitter doesn't make you happy. I don't know if you...
Nope.
I don't know. You guys hear about this, you see about this,
absolutely,
you hear about this, you see about this, you see about this thing.
Yep.
So, like, the thing that, like, he was tracking was, like, you know, over the last decade, there's been this incredible drop-off in a generation going to church, and those people don't see those people anymore, and so it's this sort of loneliness that you experience via social media, but you don't see any of those people in real life anymore, and then, like... A cult pops up and it's like, what if you saw the people that loved you and cared about you every single day? You woke up with them and had breakfast with them in the morning. You all said nice things to each other. And then you worked around each other all day. Like, it's a pretty fucking compelling argument all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Instead of being like, I don't know, somebody canceled me on Twitter and I don't know why or what it means.
Yeah. And these are adults with these anxieties, you know? And I was thinking about this on the way up here because... I don't know if anybody else out there who's exited Christianity still does this, but every now and then, especially because there are podcasts, I like to check in on different, you know, church services and things like that, just to kind of understand what's going on out there still, you know?
Right.
And the one I was listening to was this story of Jesus going to see Simon. Is that Simon Paul? I never understand. They call him
Simon.
Yeah,
Peter.
Simon Peter. Thank you. And this, I was like shocked. This was like, it was just weird because I have all this Nexium stuff going on in my head, and to see this go down, it was in front of me, was weird. But it's the story where Jesus goes to Simon Peter, and his mother has a high fever, but Jesus puts her hand on, puts his hand on her, and her fever goes away. And then the scripture is, and then his mother immediately started serving everyone. So she's suddenly better, feeding everybody dinner. And now people are coming to Simon Peter's house, and Jesus is casting out demons, and all this crazy, like, cool stuff is going on. But the pastor giving the sermon literally says, you know, there's a couple things are going to pop up when you're reading the scripture, right? You're wondering, you know, why is Jesus casting out these demons, and why are the demons
right,
not allowed to speak his name? And I'm thinking like, yeah, those are good fucking questions. I want to understand that part. And the pastor says, but we're not going to talk about that tonight. Tonight we're going to talk about community. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, and he gets into this thing and he starts talking about like, you know, Jesus had friends. You know, that's what this is about. Jesus had friends, and Jesus spent time, he knew their families. He knew, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, this is crazy because this is exactly what I'm learning about and reading about right now. You know, he's taking anything
right,
that he's finding, like whatever dick spit shows up, and is like, I'm going to turn this conversation into a conversation about community and the importance of it.
Right.
And then, of course, the Carrie Strug ending is going to be me saying, and this is the community you need to be in. It was
right,
freaking nuts.
What a lot of this...
You know who else had friends is Jeffrey Epstein. And Jeffrey Epstein...
Oh, well, yeah.
Well, I was just going to bring up what a lot of this reminds me of, especially the community aspect and getting outside to see other people who think the way you think. That's the purpose Trump rallies serve.
Terrifying.
Because that's right. His most... Like, I watch every Trump rally, and they are all terrifying. And if you look into the psychology behind those, that's the purpose they serve. Because those people, if they're on Twitter, if they're watching the news, all they're hearing is Trump is bad, everything's bad, the world is burning. But then they can go to their local arena when Trump is in town, and here's 40 or 50,000 other people who are all chanting, send her back. And they're like, oh, shit, yeah, the world really is the way I think it is. And it's
which that made a weird peek to mine was that, like, after this came out and before, like, the New York Times came out with their piece about Nexium and the knife, in between, the editor of the knife, who tried to bring me out for this job and who brought all these other people out but was already exposed, started being on Fox News all the time talking about how they were evaluating what was fake news. And so, like... My parents were seeing that and, like, messaging me and being like, are you sure that they're... And I was like, I'll lose my fucking mind.
Yeah.
It's just, if all it takes is to see the guy on television is the difference, is like, no, 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 no. Like, come on.
But listen, I mean, like, yes, that is all it takes. I really, truly believe, like, that's it. And, you know, there is a part of me that watches what's going on with Trump, and I still think to myself, like... Oh God, is he as bad as I think he is? Or am I, you know, I question myself just because, like, I'm not an idiot. You know, you're supposed to question yourself.
Right. Yeah.
And then I then go back into my world of true crime and murder and cults. And I'm like, no, you have the blueprints. Like, you know that this is how this works. Like, this is how people get taken in. And so to
you had the blueprints is such a good name for a podcast. Oh my God.
Yeah. Cut to me living in a trailer growing out my armpit hair. Like, no, I can't. Like, I it's already bad enough, guys. It's already too dark. But okay, so to kind of pull us back from the lip of the apocalypse, let's get back to Nexium. I know, I'm sorry to disappoint you. You sound so sad. But right.
I thought we were all dying on this podcast.
Oh shit.
I mean, go on, I guess.
I watched The Invitation. I thought that's what we were up to.
Oh, God, I really love that movie. That's such a good... Have you guys seen The Sacrament yet?
It's a good movie.
Have you seen The Sacrament?
Female director.
I love The Sacrament. That's another really, really good... Have you seen that, Brock?
The Church in the Darkness is basically The Sacrament as a video game. It's flawless.
Sign me up. I will definitely play that one. And I'm not even, like... I mean, let me be very clear. I can fucking kill on the Super Nintendo Yoshi's Island video game. I can rock your world. But once it got three-dimensional, I was like, I can't keep track of it.
Yeah, I'm have a console. I'll have to play it on my phone if that's an option.
I'm too
short for option. Saves me time when I talk.
It's just too stressful.
Adam.
Yeah, that's who he is. So, but back to you know, before, you know, we are, I think we could all talk about all this for way too long, but back to Nexium. And, you know, I think that what is really, really, really interesting to me is that I don't think Keith Raniere is a genius. He's obviously not. And you can, there are three reasons.
Do you think?
No, well, what's fascinating is that's his marketing. It's like, I am a genius.
Right.
I am like this kid genius, you know, whatever. He's just like the nightmare college guitar guy. But,
Oh, he absolutely, you've seen the picture with him with his shirt off.
I hate that. Do you understand? I have that picture burned into my brain, and it looks like he could have cum anywhere on him. That's what he looks like.
The cum could be anywhere.
It could be anywhere on him. And his armpits.
It's coming from inside your house.
He looks like somebody is like cast a spell and they're like, you're going to be a Wookiee. And like, but the photo is like mid change. It's so gross. He's just so gross. I hate him.
What happens with him was that, like, it takes 4 to 5 years for you to reach the point where you can actually talk to him. And in that time, everyone tells you he's the smartest guy in the entire world. And then when you finally meet him, he will walk around his property with you like on a walk around the lake, and he asks you to talk to him, and he doesn't say anything. So the thing that makes him the smartest boy in the world is the same thing that makes Jared Kushner the smartest boy in the world. Like, just if that guy never speaks, everyone's like, wow, what a smart boy. It is the exact same process.
I wish I had picked up on that for myself way early on, but I think hundreds of podcast episodes out there now.
I blew that a long time ago.
Yeah, we are not going to be able to hop on the shush train. We're stuck.
No.
We're stuck. but I do think that he managed to find his ilk of vulnerability. And I really think that that is basically the only way you succeed as a cult leader, if I may. You have to figure out who is my audience, you know, and what is it that they never, ever hear? What did their parents not say to them? Essentially is what we're dealing with.
Right.
And you've got these Bronfman girls, and I can't think of a better example of who, you know, they're perfect. You know, they're the upper class twit people that, you know, everything they own and nothing they ever do will ever be attributed to anything that they've actually ever done. And so they're going to go do the only punk rock thing they can do, which is join a cult and then use their skills to bring in the Dalai Lama for an event.
That's pretty insane.
The other thing. It's like Nexium is a cult, but like if they're, if my friend is in a cult and I'm like, you got to get out of this cult. And then she says to me like, well, if it's a cult, why did the Dalai Lama come?
Yeah.
I'd be like, I don't know. Actually, I don't know what to say.
I think that speaks to why really smart people fell for this. Because if you see someone like the Dalai Lama there.
Yeah.
That's going to add a little credit. Like, if we had the Dalai Lama
on our podcast,
on an episode of Pretty Scary, holy shit.
Yeah, we've done something right.
China would start following us, probably.
Yeah. And all of China. We would be sanctioned by China. Actually, we'd be immediately sanctioned and then immediately cut out just because we talk about ghosts.
Welcome to Pretty Scary, presented by Tencent. boy, okay.
I use a Huawei phone. They probably are listening to this already.
Good.
Yeah, our money has all been turned into Bitcoin, and this is where we're at. The last kind of portion that I want to talk about is the fact that you have a, and you probably know this about yourself, but as somebody who's researching this project for different reasons, you're in a very unique situation because you've spoken to a lot of survivors from this place. So other than like Rick Ross, for example, who is a huge cult expert, there are very few people walking around on the planet, Brock, that have communicated with as many people who have gotten out of this thing. So what are, apart from, you know, the mommy daddy issues that we've uncovered, you know, what other commonalities are you seeing about these people? I mean, do they have common fears about not coming forward still? I mean, what's going on in this community of people that's just in a deep sense of like loss and recovery at the moment?
So what I have from it is that I came out of this and I like fell into this like second wave of things where people were like, I would like to talk to you because I think I can talk to you. And I was like, I don't know why you would talk to me because like, I don't know what I'm going to fucking do with this. But like, if you need to talk to somebody. So it was basically like, can I be your therapist for this thing? And then from there was like, okay, we're going to do something. And there were a couple of different projects that have been at different points, podcasts and a TV show and some things like that, and that they'll find their own place. But throughout all that, you would wind up talking to people and doing that, and talking to the people that had left and talking to the people that had just been in it was fucking hard. What a fucking nightmare. The worst part of it was for at least a year here, opening my DMs and having somebody be like, hey, I'm this person's dad. Do you know if they're even alive? Because like they've been cut off from me because of this.
Wow.
And it's like, yeah, they are alive. I actually know where they are. I don't think you want to be put in touch with them because all they would ask you to do is to give you their life savings because of where they are. But like they're alive. And like I know that from somewhere. And there were all these opportunities to like try and do something. It lived real hard in me for a while. And then at one point I was talking to one of the people around Rick Ross who mentioned that, like, oh, when my piece came out, something like 100-150 women left the cult, like the next day. Like, it was this thing that was like, oh, hey, this was the first time that somebody ever spoke out, and they were like, oh, we'd all had some suspicions, and then this happened, and even though they told us, like, it's all fake news, we left. And, like, it was a year and a half later, and I was like, oh, well, fuck me. I did one good thing in my life. I spent the rest of my time being a piece of shit comedian and drinking and being an asshole. But one time, I helped some people. The thing that comes from that is that I was like, okay, well, how many people are left?
Right.
And no one has an answer on that because NXIVM has centers all over the world. They have Everyone in the media has sort of like centered on this as this Albany thing is like, oh, they were branding women on the pussy in Albany, and that's the thing. But like, no one has any sort of general idea of how many people are in the group worldwide. And even within that, like, how many active members are there doesn't compare to the number of people that are like, well, I believe in this, but like, I'm not like living in a compound. So like, for decades, there will be people that still exist that believe in whatever this is, even though Keith Raniere is finally in jail. And that is sort of where this episode goes, which is that for 2-3 years now, the idea was still, even though like everyone followed up what I was doing, was like, hey, NXIVM was a sex cult. At some point, they might avoid legal capture and then come back and fuck sue everyone into death for being like, how dare you call us a sex cult?
Right.
And thankfully, like, some sex trafficking and stuff happened in New York, and they were able to pin a number of people around that, and everyone fucking turned and ratted on Keith Raniere.
Pretty wonderfully, like, actually. Like, he didn't have anybody speak on his side of the trial. Like, he had no character witnesses that spoke to him. Because he had gotten people so in so deep in his inner circle that they all had to plea out. Like, all of them. Which I love. I think it's great.
Yeah. And this one follows up with that thing I said earlier about NXIVM not being pronounceable and then Googleable. The women in his sex circle were branded with his initials, and they were branded because they figured out that in that part of New Jersey, in that county, if they were to tattoo somebody with the initials, it would be illegal because they didn't have a valid tattoo license. But if they were to brand someone like cattle, there's no law in the books, which is one of those things that you're like, you fucking dove into the law books to find the worst, most evil fucking thing you could.
Jesus.
And like, well done to you. Like, way to fucking
and then,
crack the weirdest, worst
and
thing.
And then to do some, like, to get some, like, inside baseball out there about NXIVM, there's this recording of Allison and Keith walking on the property. And he kind of cues it up to make it seem like the branding then itself is all Allison Mack's idea. But what you're telling me is that they did research to discover that technically branding is not on the books as illegal. So it sounds like what happened was he says to her, we want to do some kind of branding, and then gives this to her and then records her as though it's like her idea.
Well, and the thing that everyone else presented was that, like, she sold this all as like a fun sorority sort of prank. So she took weeks to build up to this, and then, you know, this sort of thing happened. But also, like, I said this on social media when everything first hit, and I think we talked about this before, but like, I was like, hey, Allison Mack is a victim here too. And people are like, fuck you, what's wrong with you? I was like, no. I mean,
yes,
she absolutely deserves to go to jail for so very long, and she has hurt people in so many ways. But also, like, Allison Mack, the person from a couple of sci-fi shows that filmed in Vancouver, would have never come up with these ideas and would have never done with this. She was just dumb. And she did this dumb thing, and it went on for so fucking long and became so fucking awful. And you're like, you know, who do you blame for that? And it is the person that tells you how to do it. Like, she deserves punishment, but like she is a victim still within all of this, which sucks.
That's always my argument when Tom Cruise comes up and people are like, oh,
exactly.
But he's an evil Scientologist. It's like, no, evil Scientologists got him when he was like 19.
Yeah,
like,
David Miscavige is who we need to be talking to. Yeah,
he's
that.
Never heard another voice in his entire fucking
David
life.
David Miscavige's wife is still missing.
Oh,
and
she's...
nobody... Oh, she's dead, but I mean, like, nobody...
She is...
She's dead.
She's got to be
agree,
buried at
dead.
Sea.
Oh, yeah. No,
she
no.
She signed a billion-year contract with the sea.
Yeah, yeah. She did. Man, that Going Clear documentary, the most painful part of it, in my opinion, is when Tom Cruise is singing. Remember, there's like the footage of him singing at his own birthday? Oh, my God. And then the sad John Travolta singing? That part's really sad.
Right.
There's a lot of sad celebrity singing in that documentary.
It's pretty rough.
Okay, so... before we leave, Brock, let me ask you.
Yes.
How do you know you're in a cult? Because nobody thinks they're in a cult when they're in a cult. Nobody. That's the only way it works, right? Like, there's no way that early on you're saying to yourself this. Because I know people that got sucked into Landmark, like, in the beginning.
Right.
And their mind was like, this is, you gotta, like, you're in a thing. Like, this is a thing. No, Caitlin, it's a self-improvement thing. It's like, no. No, Caitlin, this is like Tony Robbins. Like, no, this is not like Tony Robbins because you're not going to Florida for a week and wasting money and then moving on. That's not what we're talking about here.
Right.
We're talking about you wasting money and your life and you're not being fed. So what do you think from your perspective after talking with these survivors and, you know, after being pursued by tiny men with big cameras?
I do love your summary of that. That's nice.
It's what I do. How do you know you're in a cult, Brock? Your perspective.
Here's what I would take that I think is the best moment. I've heard from so many people about so many bad moments, about so many bad relationships, about so many things that they were forced into. Out of all of them, I think the distillation is this. You are in a cult when you know that you are making the wrong choice, when you know that somebody is being pressuring you into something, and then you ask everyone around you, everyone that is your trusted friend, everyone that has become your family, and you say, hey, is this the wrong choice? And no one says anything. It is a situation that is defined by everyone that I talked to about the moment that they realized that they had to leave was like, hey, I realized I was going into something and like it was fucked. And I was like, hey, you guys, is this not fucked? And everyone just sort of like nodded in a midsummer cult nightmare way. And it's like the moment that you ask people to weigh in, because even in just normal universe world, I can't think of anyone in my life that like if they're like, hey, I'd like to marry this guy, that at least one of their friends wouldn't be like, fucking nah.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Everyone has like a criticism to offer for something.
Yeah.
Just to be like, at least let you hear the criticism from somewhere. In a world where no one offers a criticism or even a word and it's just like, you're in a cult then. That's when you need to run. when people just nod incoherently, run from that.
That's a good, I like that. I like that. Like, if no, yeah, I like, that's a good answer, Brock. Because other than that, well, because the thing is like, we can't judge it by money, right? Because that's like, what the fuck? I still don't understand how money works. We can't judge it by personal revelations, because I've had those in regular crazy Christian church. I've had them through meditation. I've had them watching The Simpsons. So you can't give that to anything. You got to know that you're in a cult when you have a gut feeling and you bring something up and nobody even bothers to disagree with you. They just silence you. That's a good answer. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
All right.
Solid work, man. I am sorry that you had to go through all of that, but I'm very grateful
that you
and I connected, and I'm grateful that you were willing to come on our show to talk about your experience.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you for doing it. We really appreciate it.
I don't think
thank you both for having me.
I don't think people really realize what journalists put on the line when they're trying to get an actual story, like a real story, not like, you know,
right.
I'm going to get drunk and review my best friend's wedding because it's going to be cute. Like, really trying to get actual news is usually a very risky endeavor. So thank you for doing what you did. And we appreciate that a lot.
Well, to be fair, by your standard, this was the most Vice version of like a, should I go to the woods and see if somebody murders me?
I mean, again, like if I had nothing, if I had no one like needing me for their like mental development, I would definitely be doing that stuff. That's interesting
fair
to
enough.
Me. But anyway, thank you for having us on, Brock. If people want to get to know you or come see you or whatever, how do they figure that part out?
Oh, I'm at Brock Wilbur on Twitter and all the other sites, brockwilbur.com. Search for me on the iTunes. You can find my stand-up comedy albums, a number of podcasts, including one I do with my wife about politics in the Midwest called Missouri Loves Company.
Oh, my God. So, I see what you did there. That. I do. Yeah. I get it. I like it.
Oh, thanks.
Yep, that's good. I hear that Missouri's the show me state. That's what I know about their slogan. That's true. I know a couple state slogans because I had no friends in high school. Only Jesus.
What's Illinois?
I don't know about that one.
I don't remember either, but I grew up there. So,
oh, yeah. I know that New Mexico is the land of enchantment.
No, it's not.
Well, guess what? It is legal.
No, it's not.
It's legally.
It's the land of fantastic breakfast burritos.
Maybe they should call it the land of meth enchantment.
Wow. Oh, Caitlin!
I know!
My God!
I'm sorry.
Oh, you're too much.
Oh, man. I got to stop.
That's a real epidemic there. We're sorry, New Mexico.
Sorry about your teeth. Okay. Well, Brock, have a great night, and thanks for joining us. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you later, I guess. We'll bring you back on for another cult.
Well, that was so much fun, Caitlin.
That was really, really fun. He's a cool guy, right?
Yeah.
I think that was the first time I've ever, like, really gotten a guest like that on my own for the show.
You've gotten guests before.
I know. I'm just kind of kidding. I just don't remember the last time I actually went out. I feel like Carrie is kind of our bird dog with that stuff. She's so good
at
it.
Yeah, yeah.
So this was...
People reach out to us, like Sky Borgman.
Sky's the best.
Sky's great.
Sky's great. Brock's good people. He's a great stand-up, too. Like...
I've followed him on... We followed each other on the socials for a long time.
He's just such a great... and if you ever see like his videos and stuff, it's so much funnier imagining him investigating NXIVM, knowing what he looks like.
Yeah, well, there's no way he can go undercover.
No, he's like
he's
Kyle
a mountain
Clark.
Of a
there's
man.
No, there's no yeah. like. Well, it, I mean, we're all very conspicuous people.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't. I'm not.
We all stand out.
I had a conversation with someone about this the other day. They were like, "Were you ever nervous like doing stand up?" And I was like, "I'm 5'10". Like, no, I'm not like some tiny little.
Yeah.
Wafy. And also just like I have a big personality. Like nobody's going to come at me.
Yeah.
I don't think. This is the thing that I want. This is my dismount that I want to explain to people. This is a hairy, dummy guy that spent his whole life building a multi-million dollar business only because he wanted to have sex slaves. Like you have to look, you have to understand that that was his goal.
Yeah.
Not the money. This is when people want to control people, the money is a byproduct and something that they see as a requirement in order to trick people.
Yeah.
It's not the greed part that is driving people like this. It literally is control of other human beings.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
And
control is like it's
everything.
It's as much as money. It's a driving influence in so many terrible things.
Right. And so, you know, I just want people to like take these, like, I think people are so easily like turned off and they just say, oh, it's always a money thing, and they let it go. But it's like, no, that's how people very badly want to control you.
Right.
Like as literally as possible. And there are bad people out there that want to do that. And they want to do that with you or kids or whatever. Like that's the way this is like actually going down. And we have to start being very realistic about how robust these systems are. And I do think that that is going to start happening because at a certain point, like,
oh, yeah,
this information, if Epstein is in jail, this is good news. Like, that's a big fish. That's not like
my thing about Jeffrey Epstein. He is a monster. He is a terrible person. And if he's murdered in jail, we should take to the fucking streets and demand an answer as to who did it.
Yeah.
And how
I agree.
Like, that will be, if he's killed, that will be a fucking assassination.
But here's the thing, though. Like, first of all, I completely agree with you. And it's very likely. But beyond that, I really do see Epstein in jail as hope. Because that means something's cracking. Because
Right. That
guy, if that guy isn't protected, we can actually get to some people now.
Right.
That means everybody below him. And, you know, this is another thing that nobody talked about that happened, I want to say, only a month prior to Epstein going to jail. There was a minister from Mexico who had a $1 billion ministry that was arrested and taken into jail for sex trafficking. So very slowly but surely, these big figures in sex slavery for children, they are.
Yeah.
I mean, we are watching this happen. This is really happening.
The Venezuela beauty pageant industry, too, which is huge in that country.
Yeah.
Had a big sex trafficking scandal.
And so that's, I mean, I hate to say it this way, but like, at least that's where everybody can agree. Like,
yeah,
we can all agree with that.
Right.
And that's why I keep joking about it. But if I'm ever going to run for president, my campaign is my only campaign promise. The only one I will make anybody is that if I become president of the United States, I will absolutely reinstate swift capital punishment for people convicted of sex crimes. That's what I'm going to do.
It's a decent campaign.
I'm not going to bother with the economy. I'm not going to bother with international shit. I will bring on a great team that's good at that. But if I'm ever president, the only thing I will spend my time doing is tracking down people that hurt kids. That's it. That's all I'll do.
Nice.
So vote for Caitlin. I'm just a mom. That was like the most dramatic cough.
Thank you. Yeah. I've been practicing that.
Yeah.
I've been building up to it all day.
Sweet.
Should we get out of here?
Yeah.
I'm going to die. I mean, not literally, but I'm so tired. I've been recording all day.
Let's go home.
And I had to go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That took a lot out of you.
Exhilarating film.
Yeah.
So
it zapped you, though.
Woof. Really did. All right. Caitlin, do we have anything to plug?
No.
Fucking listen to Pretty Scary. Give us good ratings and reviews on iTunes.
We need that. I'm just glad that you stopped recording with the flashlight under your chin. That was really hard for me to ignore.
I just think it makes things spooky.
It really does.
It makes things. This is what I looked like in a past life.
Yeah. You caught me off guard the first time, but I got used to it. I'm glad you stopped doing it is my whole point.
Check out flashlights, everybody. That's my plug. Put a flashlight under your face when you talk to the person in the room with
that
you.
That really is
today.
Lost its place in society somehow.
It fucked me up as a kid.
It's
I didn't like it
creepy.
At all.
I don't like it either.
Because that was what I was told was that's what you looked like in your past life.
What?
Was when you had like the shadows.
Oh my God.
And I just didn't want anyone to do it, or I didn't want to see it. It was.
I'm with you on the fight on the latter points. I just didn't realize that there was like a deep seated, like paradigmatic belief that you had about it. That's some interesting stuff.
So now we have to get flashlights and see what we look like in our past lives.
We got to take that photo. Past life, Adam and Caitlin. Sweet.
I cannot wait.
Me neither.
I wonder if it will work with the flashlight on our phones or if they'll just
blind us. Should we
find
it? Hold on. Let's find out right now. We're going to get a reaction from Adam on, does it work?
No. It looks like you had no face whatsoever.
Oh, okay. All right. It's just too bright. It's like the LED thing
versus
the like the bulb. All right. Well, we solved that mystery.
All right.
I'm glad we ended this on a Scooby-Doo note.
We really ended this on an upbeat note.
Yeah, I mean, considering where it started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry you couldn't be here for all of this, Brock.
No, but you're going to be happy that this is how it ended, I think.
You were here in our hearts.
In our hearts.
And in Caitlin's past life when she held the flashlight up to her face. I saw you.
Adam's crying blood right now. Let's go.
All right, let's get out of here. Caitlin, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.